This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiaoyi. If you live with an older person, you will be familiar with the sight of them carrying a whole bag of medications and supplements. And as many elderly people tend to have several coexisting medical conditions, how do they ensure safety while taking so many different medications at the same time? So we'll be talking about that today with Dr. Tan Kit Man, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Centre. Good afternoon, Dr. Tan. How are you today?
Hi, good afternoon, Xiaoyi. Thank you very much. I'm very well.
So we're talking about, you know, whether older people are overdosing or unnecessarily taking medications and supplements. And of course, we are concerned particularly about older people because we know that Malaysia is becoming an aging nation. Now, what exactly does this mean in terms of the health status of the older people in our society?
Well, you're right. We are becoming an aging nation. At present, we're about 6.5% aged 65 and above. And I think by the time we reach 2050, we'd be around 18 to 20%. If the percentages of older persons are higher, there will be more people living with chronic conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, arthritis, osteoporosis, kidney disease, heart disease. So it's a success story that people are living longer. Now, not all these people may be unwell. They can have very good quality of life if they continue to take their medications and treatment as recommended. In terms of global burden, yes, it's all over the world that there'll be more older people living longer with medical conditions, yeah.
The 6.5% currently who are over 65 years old, what proportion of that population is burdened with disease? Do we know?
I suppose just an estimate. I'm not sure exactly of the percentages, but more than half are likely to have at least one or two conditions such as high blood pressure or diabetes.
Mm. Yeah. Going by the prevalence rates of high blood pressure and diabetes and these kinds of non-communicable diseases, obviously.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, these are the kinds of chronic conditions that are linked to the practice of taking a lot of medications. And I understand that it's known as polypharmacy. So actually, could you define what is polypharmacy? How many kinds of medications are we talking about?
Arbitrarily, polypharmacy is defined as taking five or more medications. And the prevalence of it in some studies in America is noted to be 1/3 of older persons are on polypharmacy, whereas a study in the United Kingdom said approximately 1/5 of older persons are on polypharmacy.
And what kind of medications are included? Are these only prescription drugs?
No, it actually includes prescription drugs and over-the-counter medications or drugs that people can buy from their local pharmacy, such as painkillers or antihistamines, and also supplements, including vitamins and minerals.
So how, obviously, it is because older people tend to have these chronic conditions, but how do we get to the point where a person is taking more than five? That does seem quite a lot for somebody to be dealing with. Are all these medications absolutely necessary?
The doctor who prescribes the medications will have to rank the medical conditions in importance. If it's a life-threatening condition such as heart disease or epilepsy or seizures, the person will need the medications to control the condition. But if it's a silent condition such as osteoporosis, which is thinning of the bones, or high cholesterol, they are actually silent conditions, and the treatment is actually a long-term investment to prevent fractures in future or to prevent stroke or heart attack in future. So the doctor can have a discussion with the patient as to what are the benefits of taking these medications or the risks, and the patient also has a say in deciding whether they want to accept the treatment or not. That's one way of how patients end up on many medications and how they can discuss with their doctor, what is my priority?
All right.
Yeah. However, there are other ways that a patient can end up on unnecessary medications, and this is what we call a prescribing cascade. If, for example, the person is prescribed something that is actually for a side effect of another drug, we've seen this happen before. I can give an example, a very simple example. Let's say a person is put on a common high blood pressure tablet called amlodipine. And many people have no side effects from it, but a minority may suffer leg swelling, which usually does not harm the person. If it's severe, they may not be able to put on their shoes, and this can be quite uncomfortable. Then, if the person presents to the doctor with leg swelling, the doctor sometimes may think there's an element of heart failure and prescribe what we call a furosemide or diuretic.
Mm.
The layperson would call it a water tablet
to
pass out the urine and the legs will be less swollen. That, as a consequence of that, the person could get dizzy and have low blood pressure.
Mm.
Then they may see another doctor in another clinic and the doctor may say, hey, that sounds like vertigo, you're dizzy. We'll prescribe you a medication for vertigo. And subsequent to that, the person may fall down because they're dizzy, they're having low blood pressure, and break their hip, and they end up on medications for osteoporosis. So you can see the cascade there.
Just from the high blood pressure, the side effect of the initial medication for high blood pressure, you've ended up with possibly four medications.
Yeah. But if the side effect was picked up early, perhaps changing the amlodipine to another type of medication may have prevented some of this. It's very difficult to know. But many people do well on amlodipine, so don't get worried if you're on amlodipine.
Mm-hmm. It's more a cautionary tale about, you know, if you have the side effect, that it shouldn't be treated as a separate condition, that you should look at the medication that's causing that initial side effect first.
That's right. A medication review is always very important in dealing with an older person's complaints, because a certain percentage of those complaints may be an adverse event from the medications they are on.
How do we avoid a situation like this where it's quite possible that this patient has been going to different doctors for each of the separate side effects that they are experiencing? So how do we avoid this when the third doctor down the line is not aware of the full history, perhaps?
Well, it is recommended for any person, not only older persons, to find a general practitioner or doctor that they are comfortable with and to stay with that doctor long term if possible. But if a person was to present to a doctor with a new medical problem, they should be upfront about all their medical conditions and to bring a strip of all their medications for review. They might prompt the doctor by saying, "Doctor, I'm taking these three or four medications. Is it possible I'm having a side effect from them? Or what do you think? These are my problems. What do you think?"
All right. Now, so we are talking about all of this happening in a community setting. So sort of out of the hospital, so to speak. But polypharmacy, all these medications coming together can occur in different settings, right? It can occur in the hospital, it could be in a nursing home as well, and of course, to a large extent, within the community setting. So is polypharmacy different within these different settings? Do they have different impact?
Yeah, polypharmacy is always defined as five medications or above, and some countries made it four medications and above.
Mm.
A person in a nursing home, just by thinking about it, would be more likely on polypharmacy because they're frailer and more dependent. Hence, they ended up in a nursing home compared to those who are living in the community. The added thing about being in a nursing home is that if the person has dementia or some behavioral problems, there may be additional medications to calm down the person or to quiet them down. However, we must be aware that these medications can have quite severe side effects, like causing drowsiness and unsteadiness. And sometimes they're so drowsy, they may choke when eating or drinking.
Mm.
So apart from medications, the main treatment for agitation or aggression is actually reassurance and distraction and looking out for factors that trigger off those episodes. So that's one way of reducing polypharmacy in the nursing home when it comes to dementia patients with behavioral problems.
Right.
In the hospital, usually people go in with an urgent medical illness or an acute medical illness, and definitely polypharmacy increases in hospital. The doctor will keep in mind what were the previous medications before admission, stop those that may be harmful at that time. For example, if a person is very sick with low blood pressure from septic shock, the blood pressure medications must be stopped. Mm. But then they will add on other medications like intravenous antibiotics. If there was pain, there could be painkillers. If there was nausea, there could be medications for nausea, medication for fever. So that's how a person temporarily has polypharmacy in hospital.
Okay.
But when the illness is better, the doctor will then again reduce those acute medications and perhaps prescribe back some of the old medications.
All right. We're talking about, you know, the phenomenon of older people taking multiple medications and supplements. We have Dr. Tan Kit Man, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center, in the studio with us. And when we come back, I would like to find out more about the other kinds of adverse events or complications that will occur from many of the different types of medications that older people commonly take, as well as supplements. That's very common practice among Malaysian society as well. So we'll be right back after this break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Shao Ik. We're talking about polypharmacy today, and that's actually the practice of taking more than five different types of medications, whether it's prescription or also over-the-counter medications. And this is a very common practice found among older people who tend to have several coexisting medical conditions. We have in the studio with us, of course, Dr. Tan Kit Man, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center, to help us understand more about the risks of polypharmacy and how we can manage it. And before the break, Dr. Tan had explained that one very common thing that leads to unnecessary medications coming into the mix is this thing called prescribing cascade, where you have perhaps a side effect from medication for high blood pressure, and then that side effect is being treated with other medications, which then lead to other side effects. But, you know, speaking of these kinds of side effects, we know that you know, when you throw a lot of medications into the mix, this is what you get. Somebody may get headaches, somebody may get dizziness, somebody may get leg swelling, depending on what is the individual medication here. What are some of these most common ones that older people tend to complain of, especially when they're taking several medications at the same time?
I can give some common examples. For example, there is a class of blood pressure medications called ACE inhibitors. And the example would be perindopril, ramipril, lisinopril. These are the real chemical names of those medications. Of course, they have many, many brand names in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. It can cause a cough. And for some people, the cough is a minor irritation. They can tolerate it. But for others, they really cough until their chest wall hurts and it affects their quality of life. Many don't think about it. They might not think that, hey, how come my medication can cause a cough? So no, they don't think about it. But if it's picked up, the medication may be changed to another class of medications.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, as simple as that.
Right. Yeah. Any other common ones that could be tight?
Yeah. Metformin is a very common diabetes medication, and many people do very well on it. But a minority will suffer from loose bowel motions or diarrhea. I have had one unfortunate patient who didn't know that metformin could cause that, and he ended up getting colonoscopes to find out there was a problem with his bowel. And then he told me, but doctor, another doctor found out that I'm taking this medication, and when he stopped it, my diarrhea went away. I said, oh, that's great, that's great.
So it's actually as simple as that in a way.
It can be, because medication side effects are more likely to occur in the older person. So a 40-something, 50-year-old taking the same medication may be less likely to get the side effect compared to a 70- or 80-year-old.
Can we talk a little bit about different medications interacting with each other? What are the common complications that occur there?
Okay, different medications, the way they interact with each other is that some medications may make the other medication more or less effective or potent. And the combinations are vast because there are so many thousands of medications out there. So nowadays, in some healthcare systems, there could be computer softwares that can run potential interactions by keying in the medical conditions and also the names of the medications. And then the doctor or pharmacist can be guided by that. The doctor and pharmacist, though, still have to have their own clinical judgment because some interactions could be considered minor.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, looking at the risk-benefit ratio, it's okay for the person to continue on the medication. They may need to adjust one of the doses down or up because if it makes the other medication more or less effective. There's also another thing called drug-disease interaction, where the medication may make the medical condition worse. Let's say a person has to be on short-term steroids for some sort of inflammation going on. It could make their diabetes control poor by driving the blood sugars up.
Right.
So that's one example, yeah.
Okay, all right. And what about the dangers of all these medications in terms of affecting a person's daily functioning? So it may not be as serious as, like you say, leg swelling or severe cough, but in terms of perhaps their cognitive function on a day-to-day basis, what kind of impact do you see there?
We have to take into consideration whether the medication can cause drowsiness or sleepiness or fatigue in an older person. So when a doctor starts a new medication in an older person, we usually start one at a time. We don't start like two or three for two or three different conditions if they're not urgent. We'll say, huh, madam, we will start this visit. Try it for a month. If you notice any side effects, we'll have to reconsider whether you need this we can change you to another medication. Then once that condition is controlled, we'll start the next medication, maybe the next month. So yes, we have to be very careful because being drowsy or fatigued on a medication can cause a person to fall, and worst case scenario, they fracture their hip or they suffer from bleeding in the brain if the fall was very severe. Yeah.
In terms of the kinds of adverse effects and complications from interactions, how prolonged would these be? Are they irreversible?
No, they're not irreversible. We hope that in many cases, by withdrawing the medications, the effects would reverse in a few days to a few weeks. However, there are some very long-acting drugs that stays in the system for many months.
Right.
As an example, there is a heart medication called amiodarone, or the brand name is Cordrone. It's a very good drug. So everyone, if you're on that, please don't worry, because some people get away with very few side effects. Some are just not so lucky. The person could suffer from very poor appetite, fatigue, tiredness, thyroid disorders, and also breathing problems if they're on the medication for months or years. However, if the changes are insidious, some may not know to attribute the side effects to this drug called amiodarone. And we have had cases where if the person had taken the drug for 3 or 4 years, even though we withdraw the medication or the drug, the person still remains frail. And no matter what we do with good nutrition and physiotherapy, they do not regain their full function compared to before starting the medication.
You know, you've described a lot of things that actually do seem very insidious. And, you know, patients are supposed to look out for side effects when they start on a medication, but a lot of these may not even be attributed as a side effect. You may just think that it's natural for an older person to feel more fatigued or to feel a little bit dizzy sometimes. So that must be very difficult to manage. How do you get patients to accurately report on any potential side effects?
Well, the doctor prescribing any medication should be able to know the common side effects of these medications. We have to be careful not to overstress them in case the patient gets so worried that they are not willing to try a very good medication.
Mm.
So that's very important. But it's also important for the patient to know what side effects their medication may have. It may not be a good idea to Google potential side effects of their own medications, but there are some good reputable websites out there that can guide the patient in simple language what side effects to look out for. We mustn't attribute the fatigue and tiredness or low energy levels just due to aging, because there are many older people who remain quite energetic and active. So it's really a dose of common sense from all parts, including the family of the children, the doctor, and the person themselves, to question whether, hey, are any of my medications contributing to my symptoms?
Okay.
We are taught in geriatric medicine that medications are something that we must review when a person comes in with a new symptom or a new complaint.
Yeah. But there's also, of course, the fear that patients stop taking their prescribed medications because they're feeling uncomfortable or they've read something. What are the dangers when patients stop their prescriptions arbitrarily?
Well, if it's a serious medical condition, such as high blood pressure or heart disease, stopping those medications all of a sudden could precipitate an event. So it's important to counsel the patient that, hey, if you feel unwell or you have doubts, why don't you clarify with your doctor or pharmacist instead of just stopping it? However, if the person is suffering severe side effects and they know that, hey, this side effect only started after I started this medication, it is fair enough to stop it, but do see a doctor soon afterwards to clarify the matter.
Yeah. Is it possible to simplify medication regimes? So meaning a patient who's taking, let's say, more than five different types of medications, and some have to be taken in the morning, some have to be taken three times a day, you know, that kind of the different dosages and all that. Is it possible for a doctor to sit down with a patient and see how that can be simplified?
Yes, of course, it's possible to do that. It does take a little bit more time, but it is a worthwhile task. A person may be on the same medication for many, many years, maybe more than 10 years, and it's a twice or three times a day medication. Perhaps now there could be a newer medication that does the same job, but it's only once a day. Because everyone is aware that adherence or compliance to a medication regime is poorer when it's multiple dosing. It's not very convenient. People forget, and they also feel a little bit depressed or fed up that they have to take medications three times a day. So it is possible to do that. Some medications can be replaced. Oral medications may be replaced by injections several times a year. The simplest example I can think of are osteoporosis medications. Calcium vitamin D, of course, for osteoporosis should be taken daily, but there is a once-a-week medication called alendronic acid, or Fosamax, which the person swallows once a week with a big glass of water, and they mustn't lie down for 30 minutes afterwards, or there's a risk of ulcerating the esophagus. So now there's a more modern injection called denosumab that can be taken once every 6 months, and it's rather side effect free. However, a few unlucky ones may get a flu-like symptoms or infections. So if a person takes that injection once every 6 months, they would not have to take the once a week medication. So there are examples like that. Some medications can be delivered through a patch as well, like a plaster, but the medication is in the patch and it's absorbed slowly in 24 hours, instead of taking a medication, a tablet, three times a day. A dementia medication called Exelon or rivastigmine patch is one of the examples.
So let's talk a little bit about over-the-counter medications. Now, those are obviously so common that we could be inadvertently creating unnecessary interactions or complications. So what would be some of the common things that you would advise patients to look out for if they're already taking a lot of prescribed medications? What kind of over-the-counter medications should they be cautious with?
I suppose if a person's already taking many medications, they should be cautious with adding in any medication without consulting their doctor. Something quite common that we can buy over-the-counter are painkillers. And one class of medications are called non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They are marvelous painkillers, and it kills the inflammation, and the person usually feels better within the day or two. The names are diclofenac, celecoxib, Voltarol, Celebrex. Those are brand names and also generic names of these medications. If a person is already prescribed that type of painkiller by their doctor and they buy more, they might find that, hey, these are different named medications. I'm taking different things for the pain. But the underlying chemical may be from the same family. And long-term usage of this non-steroidal anti-inflammatories may cause kidney damage, drive up their blood pressure, increase the risk of stroke and heart attacks. Mm. So that's a real danger there. So any medication from over-the-counter, painkillers, antihistamines, cough syrups, I think it should be checked with their physician or prescribing doctor instead of just buying on the recommendation of a friend or a well-meaning family member.
All right. Supplements now. That's very common. And of course, you've mentioned some supplements are very important in the case of osteoporosis, you know, your calcium and vitamin D. Mm. So what are the potential effects of adding supplements into that polypharmacy, that basket of medications already being taken?
Supplements also can, a few of them, increase or reduce the effectiveness of the prescribed medications. I'll also give examples because it's easier to describe things by examples. Vitamin E or ginkgo biloba, mm-hmm. I think you've heard of them before, they may have a little bit of blood thinning properties. So many people don't suffer a side effect of bleeding on them. But the frail older person, if they're already taking an antiplatelet for stroke prevention, such as aspirin or clopidogrel, brand name Plavix, mm-hmm. and they take this ginkgo or high-dose vitamin E, it may actually precipitate or start bleeding from somewhere. For example, bruising on the skin or a bit of bleeding from the stomach. So that's a very severe, a worst-case scenario, but we have to be aware of that. Ginseng, which is also a popular supplement, may actually drive up blood pressure and cause palpitations. So again, in the older person, caution has to be taken if they were to consider these medications. Personally, if I see a patient with high blood pressure, if they ask me, doctor, is it okay I take a little bit of ginseng? I'll probably say no. Or else, if they're very insistent, I say there is a risk. And if you're taking it at a very, very dilute dosage, or not at all, if possible.
So it's very difficult when it comes to traditional medicine, isn't it? And in our cultures, we do trust in herbal preparations as tonics. We may not see them as medications or therapies, but we do take them frequently as tonics, or as we say in Chinese, to bao. What are the potential dangers there?
The traditional medications or supplements, I reckon there'll be some active ingredients in them. But if it's not prepared in a scientific manner, let's say in a factory or in a laboratory, the potencies of each different batch may be different. So there is a real danger that although a person has been taking the medication for some years, they'll say, hey, I've been taking all this time, no problems. Suddenly a more potent batch comes out and they may suffer severe side effects from that. We have had cases where patients went into liver or kidney failure after long-term traditional medications. Also, we find that some medications may not be real, or they could be fraudulent traditional medications where the producers of it silently put in something like steroids, which can generically make the person feel better by having more energy and they feel happier. Mm. And if the person remains on that long term, they will suppress their own body's ability to produce the natural steroids. And let's say the person suddenly decides, I've had enough of this traditional medication, or actually it's so expensive, I now don't want to spend any more money on these traditional medications. They stop suddenly. They come into hospital with a very severe syndrome called Addisonian crisis, where their blood pressure crashes, they look very unwell, and they need to be resuscitated. So these things can happen. Of course, I'm telling all the worst case scenarios, but we have seen them in hospital. So we have to warn our patients to be very careful, and if at all possible, don't take supplements or medications that are not regulated or guaranteed, let's say, by Department of Health or FDA approved, that sort of thing. Yeah,
it's very difficult though, isn't it? Because
yes,
we trust a lot in the the traditional Chinese herbalist or the traditional practitioners that perhaps the families have been seeing for generations. So it's something that we really need to balance very carefully.
That's right. And I don't want to put down all traditional medications. I suppose if a person really does believe in it, they should find a reputable center that has some background or history of success and good reputation.
We're talking about polypharmacy today, and that's the practice of taking at least five or more different types of medications and supplements, and what are the potential health effects of that, especially on older people. We have in the studio Dr. Tan Kit Man, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Centre. We'll be right back after this break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me today is Dr. Tan Kit Man, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Centre. We are asking, are older people overdosing on medications and supplements? And this is a concern because above 65 years old in particular, you will probably be living with many chronic medical conditions at the same time, and you may be taking a lot of different types of prescription medications, over-the-counter medications, as well as supplements. So we've talked before the break about the kinds of adverse reactions that result from common medications that we take, the interactions between different drugs, and how some drugs may even have an impact on another health condition that you are living with. Dr. Tan, what can we do then? Because these medications are important. So how can we ensure that patients are getting the treatment that they need without suffering the unnecessary overdosing of other medications?
For a person who is on medications for several conditions, it is good to have a regular physician or doctor that they are used to and they are comfortable with, and to do a regular medication review, perhaps every 3 to 6 months. And even the patient can prompt the doctor by saying that, "Doctor, I'm on 7 medications. Do I still really need all of them?" Mm. And the doctor, of course, also when they see an older person or anybody with medical conditions, they will review the targets of treatment every time and whether the condition is acute or is it fully treated. Now, it's rarely cured, as we know. Mm-hmm. High blood pressure, diabetes, it's rarely cured. But lifestyle measures has to go hand in hand. Because a person who's diabetic, if they keep eating very high sugar, high carbohydrates, high fat diet, unfortunately our delicious Malaysian diet is full of that, they will need more and more medications for their diabetes. For high cholesterol though, if the cholesterol does come down with treatment and there are now lifestyle measures, I do try to reduce the dosage and perhaps in future even take off the cholesterol medication if the cholesterol stays reasonably below 5. There's also a debate whether in older persons who's never had a heart attack or a stroke, whether adding in a cholesterol medication in their 80s is of any help, or is the help that we render, is it significant? Because the benefits from a medication in older age may not be as high as a 50-year-old man, for example.
Because there is, of course, the debate between taking statins, taking aspirin.
Aspirin, yes, yeah. Of course, yeah, yeah. Aspirin.
So I think for patients, let's not use the word patients, for many people, they are so confused by all the information that they're reading. Are statins necessary or are they dangerous? Do I need to take an aspirin daily? So, you know, what advice would you give to people who's reading about all this and wondering what they should do?
By and large, if the person has had an event such as a heart attack or ischemic stroke, then they will benefit from an antiplatelet such as aspirin and a cholesterol-lowering drug such as a statin. However, if a person has not suffered a heart attack or a stroke and they are considering aspirin and the statin for what we call primary prevention, means preventing the first or sentinel event of a stroke or heart attack, we need to treat many more people to reduce the risk of one person having a heart attack or stroke. And it could be in the tune of number needed to treat of 1 over 70 or 80, or even higher sometimes. But if the person already had a stroke or heart attack, then they probably should be on an antiplatelet and statin, providing they're not getting severe side effects. If they are, then the medication should be stopped or changed for another one.
Okay. And I think just to wrap up, what should doctors, you know, we are talking about people seeing their family physicians, or perhaps they could be other specialists and not geriatricians, right? What kind of principles should doctors have in mind when they're reviewing a person's medication regime? So I think taking into consideration the patient's perspective, right, instead of treating a disease.
Yeah, so the principles would be as little as possible to keep the person well. Mm-hmm. And the doctor will systematically go through their head whether the condition is it active or inactive. Is it a potentially life-threatening condition if we withdraw the medications? If it is, of course, we don't. Is the target of treatment too tight at a higher age group? Because we cannot have a blood pressure that's too low. 115, 116 may be fine for a 50-year-old, but it may not be fine for an 80-year-old, and they'll start feeling weak and dizzy. So there are many things to go through when considering the necessity of all the medications. There has been research studies done around the world, and there are guidelines that we can refer to. The American guidelines for potentially inappropriate medications in the older person is called the Beers criteria. Not the diamond criteria, but the Beers. The Beers criteria, B-E-E-R-S. And in Europe, there's the START and STOP criteria. Stop is spelled S-T-O-P-P and start is spelled as start. So physicians can refer to those lists for guidance on what may be inappropriate in an older person. However, the physician still has say if they feel that the person does need the medication, they can use it with caution.
What is your final advice for people who are on several different medications? How do they manage their risks?
Well, for a person on multiple medications, my final advice to them would be to have a good relationship with your doctor and keep in mind that likely the medications are keeping you well. But if you feel that you may be having side effects, do not be afraid to approach your doctor and discuss with them, showing them your list of medications and your symptoms, whether the symptoms could be related to this. Do have an open communication with your doctor and do not be afraid that they get angry if you're not taking medications. It's better to be upfront about it, so that a good treatment plan can be planned out for the person.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tan. That was Dr. Tan Kitman, consultant geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center. We've been talking about polypharmacy, the practice of taking multiple medications and supplements. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.